Welcome to Puentes a la Comunidad, Bridges to the Community. Hello, I'm your host, Emily Guerra. My guest on this edition is Professor Emerita of English and American Studies at the University of Texas, El Paso, Shelley Armitage, also author of the book Walking the Llano. Thank you for joining me on Puentes.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Your book is a memoir of place, and what does that mean?
I wanted to write a book that spoke for the land, so to speak. I grew up in this particular place, and so I was aware somewhat of the prehistory and history, and I wanted to give voice to those disappeared stories and bring them back to life.
Where is this place, you said, the Llano? What is it?
The Llano is actually 32,000 acres of one of the largest plateaus in North America, and it runs in part of eastern New Mexico into the Texas Panhandle and down south from there near Lubbock. So it's thought by most people to be grasslands, flat grasslands, but it's really a mountain of sorts.
Yeah, because a Llano in Spanish is the plains.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so, the plains and the Llano Estacado were, as the Spanish acknowledged, a kind of sea of grass, but also, as some American explorers called it, a great American desert. And so part of my goal was to show that it was not a desert, that it was, and even if arid, it was a beautiful and miraculous place.
And you were born and raised in the Llano. What is the name of the place?
I grew up in a place called Vega, appropriately, Vega, Meadow, Texas. And it's 35 miles west of Amarillo. And, you know, those two names say a lot about why they were named with Spanish names. One, you know, meadow, and the other yellow for the color of the grasses in that area. So that's specifically what I was writing about, but in a larger sense, I wanted to really talk about the meaning of all of our places to us, our relationships to them.
It's called Walking the Llano. That means you walked it.
Yes, I started on the family farm and grasslands, which happened to be near I-40 west of Vega, and I walked 30 miles to the Canadian River. And I walked down an intermittent creek bed called the Middle Alamosa Creek, which used to have a lot of cottonwoods along it and still has spring sites and prehistoric sites, Comanche and Kiowa sites, and of course was a homeland for a while of the New Mexico Pastores, who actually settled the Canadian River Valley.
How long did it take you to walk it?
I actually cheated, I guess. I spent several summers doing this because I would walk a ways and then I would come back and research what I had seen. Flora and fauna and, you know, flint quarry remnants from the Alabates Flint Quarry, which is east. And that is one of the oldest industries in North America, that flint quarry. So it took quite a while and quite a few hikes, and probably about four summers. And then I wasn't aware I was really going to write a book about it, and that took several more summers and years.
So in all total, you had how many years in researching the book?
Probably five years at least.
And is this your only book you've written?
No, I've written eight books and several articles. The books, the other books I've done have been scholarly books, but hopefully readable books. And one was on John Held Jr., who invented the flapper. Another was on Rose O'Neill, who invented the Cupid dolls. So I was looking at those two artists and how they also were fine artists, but also popular artists.
And so what was your passion about the Llano? Why was it important to write the book?
Well, my dad had known the earliest Hispanic settler, Isabel Gourlay, who was from Anton Chico, New Mexico. And Isabel was an old man when my dad was 16. So Dad told me Isabel stories my whole life, but of course Isabel had been deceased since 1936. And I thought of the two men's lives as covering an historic period, or maybe more, and that they had a connection, you know, that was very important to tease out again, that their stories had been lost, especially Isabel's. And so I wanted to make that connection. It seemed to me, because Isabel's dugout was at the end of these hikes on the Canadian River, and my dad's farm was at the beginning of the hikes, to me the geography also connected the two men's stories and everything that transpired in between.
And how is it relevant to this community?
Because I think a book like this speaks to community and speaks to the importance of all of our histories and the lost lives that are often forgotten, and how much strength they give us, and how much they tell us about the beauty of the world if we just dwell in it, if we dwell in these places and spend time in them. So to me, it speaks of community, but also has a real New Mexico connection because of the trade with the Mogollon people to a group up there called the Antelope Creek Phase people, also a trade with the Anasazi and the Antelope Creek Phase people, and then, of course, the Pastores themselves who settled that Canadian River Valley.
So is a lot of this history in your book?
It's all nonfiction, and it has my personal story because I lost my whole family during the time I was hiking. So the landscape became sort of like adopted me, so to speak. I know that maybe sound a little corny, but that's how I felt as an adopted child among, you know, the rocks and the arroyos. And I felt like that this place was something, you know, very profound that needed someone to call its name, to let it speak kind of through all of us.
Well, you're a retired educator. How would you influence young people to write?
Oh, I would tell them that all stories are important. Everyone's story is important. And that if we don't tell our stories, Leslie Silko said, we're nothing without the stories. By which I think she meant they are our connection to our roots, to our history, and also to our futures. Because when we tell stories, we send them forward, as well as maybe look backward. So I think that young people have amazing stories. I used to tell my students at UTEP this all the time, please write down your stories. And of course they had amazing stories. And it gave them a sense of confidence, I think, to know that their stories were just as important as some best-selling writer, which I truly believe.
What inspired you to be able to inspire others to write?
Well, I had relatives who were poets, but very amateurish, great aunts who were really very creative, and they encouraged me when I was a young girl. My parents, who never went to college, you know, tried to provide for my brother and I in terms of education being the number one important thing. And so, you know, these were my inspirations as well as the land itself, which I experienced as a baby on. My dad took me to the farm in the pickup. And so I came by it naturally, I guess.
And as an instructor, what were some of the difficulties that you encountered or struggles, possibly challenges, with students that you were able to help them overcome in writing?
I think the first thing would be having confidence, them having confidence in their own lives, in their own voices. And the second thing would be, you know, feeling like that confidence could translate into something that they could share, not only with their classmates, but possibly with the world. And, you know, that they are not isolated islands, that they really are part of a larger community of sharing.
So oral histories and the written word as well brings us to be part of history.
Yes, indeed, I think it does. And I think that the stories that we tell link, create a kinship, if you will. I mean, the Comanche had a word out on these plains for, I can't pronounce it, but they had a word for a kinship of all living things, and that included stories, dances, all kinds of expression like that.
Well, that's how people communicated at that time.
Yes.
Through pictorial type of stories.
Right, petroglyphs, pictographs, things of that sort. I found a number of those along the Middle Alamosa. And that was one of my points, that women's culture, if you will, was often expressed through material culture. You know, quilts, things that they made, saltillo blankets, things of that sort, you know, were a way of communicating, really, and of sharing sort of family values and the beauty of what they saw before them, I think.
Well, now you've been sharing your Walking the Llano, a Texas memoir of place. And what's next? Are you writing another book?
Someone I encountered the other day on the trail over by the Rio Grande asked me that question. Oh, I love your book, she said, and what's next? And I sort of froze for a minute. But I actually would like to write more using oral history and trying to tease out stories in places, even like Las Cruces. I'd like to write something here about the environment and people here in this place, because I think it's a real treasure. The Chihuahuan Desert bears a lot of commonality with the Llano in terms of people dismissing it and thinking that nothing is here, but of course it teems with all kinds of life.
Well, thank you for sharing your passion about the Llano, your passion about writing this book here with us. You're definitely a bridge to the community, un puente a la comunidad. And again, my guest is UTEP Professor Emerita of English and American Studies, Shelley Armitage, but most of all, the author of the book, Walking the Llano. And where can they get your book?
It can be ordered at Barnes & Noble. It's in their warehouse. Also Amazon, but also the Southwest Environmental Center here. And down in Mesilla, at the bookshop there in Mesilla, they're carrying it as well.
Again, thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. For KRWG, I'm Emily Guerra.